We're looking at what it is to pursue God, specifically as heads of the home. Tom is now going to share with us, and then we'll turn it over to Jason. And not to steal either of their thunder, but just by way of introduction, as I understand it, Tom can be totally... No, that's not right. But Tom's demonstration, what I would hope for you guys to hear and see in Tom is his gentle... shepherd-like leadership of his family, and how that might cast a vision for you all. And then with Jason, how real the enemy's schemes are to destroy us in our pursuit of God, specifically through our lusts and through our wandering thoughts and all the pitfalls that the enemy puts out there. So... without further ado,
Tom. Okay. Yeah, so this came about in sort of a gradual way, my being here this morning, in this, at least in this role. I got an email a few weeks ago from somebody in our church office suggesting that maybe I would be able to share something in the men's meeting coming up at the 1st of November. And that was about all it said. Would you be willing? If you are, then Eric will get some more information to you later on. And I thought, well, I guess I could do that. And so I started to think, put some my thoughts together. What are the... Well, I think the topic that was in the email was something like having a godly family. Oh, okay. So maybe I start thinking about what are the five steps to having a godly family. And actually, that was sort of a fruitful time of thinking because... Yeah, what it came down to was, you know, there really aren't any easy steps. It's having a godly relationship, first of all, and then having that sort of seep its way through the rest of the family. And that's not an easy thing to do. So when I did finally get together with Eric, he sort of put some parameters around it. So the topic is certainly not that broad. He was familiar with a little bit of the journey that our family made when we moved from a previous church to this one, and he wanted me to relate that story. So, when I suggested that to somebody, a friend of mine who was somewhat familiar with it, well, he said, "That's obvious why Eric thinks that's a good example of leadership, because you came up with the right end answer." But I don't think that was what his motivation was. And in fact, he kind of plays into the story a little bit. So really, what I'm going to do is just sort of relate our experience as a family, and at least from my point of view. And there's at least one other person in this room who probably has a different way of looking at it, having experienced it from a different position. But maybe he won't interrupt me with too many corrections. I don't know. At any rate, we've been attending this church now for about 6 years. But our journey here started much earlier than that. In fact, Eric played a big role in it. It turned out that back in the mid-90s, we were going to be away for a year, and we're looking for somebody to live in our house for a year and rent from us. And we happened to be somewhat neighbors of Rich and Sarah Loudon and friends of theirs, and they suggested one day, well, we might know somebody who's looking for a place to live for a while that maybe that would mesh with your need to find somebody to be in your home. And so we started I think maybe email existed back in those days. Yeah, we started an email conversation with the Irwins, because they were just getting ready to move from St. Louis here, and they needed a place to live while they were getting settled. And so we had this email conversation for a while, and then Eric came out here, and we started meeting. We had several breakfast meetings where we would talk about the details around, you know, the business transaction. But we also ended up getting into a lot of other conversations during the course of our times together, and kind of developed a bit of a relationship. So that happened, and then time passed. They ended up staying in our home for that year, and so we had other opportunities to interact with their family, which was very good and enjoyable. But we continued attending the church that we had been a part of actually for a long time. In fact, I probably should get into a little bit of the background of our relationship with that church, because that really does play into the story. We had attended a Free Methodist church previously, and had for basically all of our lives, my wife as a child growing up, as well as me. In fact, her relationship with that church went back some generations. Her father and her grandmother were pastors in the Free Methodist Church. Her grandmother kind of for a shorter period of time, but she was. And her both sides of the family, probably unknown generations, were Free Methodists. And especially during our younger years, that was a strong identity. So, you know, it was much more than just this is the church that we attend. There was that history. And then beyond that, I guess our practice was we would commit to a church and we stayed in that church. Since we were married, the only time we ever changed churches is if we moved out of the community that our church was in. And so we weren't... It wasn't our practice to just think, well, maybe it's time to look at another church and go there for a while. So there was that was part of the background as well. And the church that we were attending, we actually helped start about 15 years earlier. And we were very much involved in the church at the time when things started to happen that made me think about maybe making a switch. So we're very much involved in the church. We had a close relationship with the pastor and his family. And we just had this mindset that this was our church. And so that's kind of the background. So we were meeting at this, we were attending this church, very much involved in it. And at one point, circumstances changed so that we had to find a new place to meet. We had been renting a school, and we ended up changing the venue that we met in, and it ended up that we were meeting in another church that happened to be occupied on Sunday mornings. So we had to figure out a way to be flexible and figure out how we might work with the fact that it wasn't available Sunday morning. So we started having our main church service on Sunday evenings. And... well, I don't know. Our practice was to get up every Sunday morning and go to church, and somehow I couldn't imagine watching football or whatever else on Sunday morning, so we had to figure out what are we going to do on Sunday morning. So we ended up coming here, and for a period of, I think it was close to 2 years, we were visitors at CPC, I'd say. But we'd come here in the mornings, but we didn't feel like this was our church, but we were just sitting here and enjoying the fellowship and the teaching, and then we went to church in the evenings, and that went on for a couple of years, and then after that, things changed back, and we started, our other church started meeting in the morning, so our time at CPC came to an end. We thought that was sort of the end of that relationship. And during the time that we went here, you know, there were a number of theological points of dissonance, I'd say. And I essentially figured out a way to navigate around all of them and you know, just kind of didn't take them seriously and would have certainly many times in my mind thinking, well, I know why that's not true because of this and this. And that really was still the case when after 2 years we stopped attending here. But for some reason, there were a number of issues that were sort of way back in the back of my mind that began to head up to the forefront a little bit more. And I don't remember exactly how long it was, but it was a period of time went by, and I started to deal with some of the questions that I had really thrown away during the time that we had attended here, and started examining things a little bit more closely. Started to get books and read up on Reformed theology, and I think it was a little bit alarming to my wife when she started seeing some of these books show up, but So I went through that actually for quite a while, and it was a slow process, and I began to see that maybe there is some truth to the claims that of the distinctives of Reformed theology. And I won't go into all the details there, but eventually my thinking changed, and I started to see that putting God's sovereignty at the very core actually had made some things fall into place a little bit better than they had before that. So that put me into a difficult situation. I started thinking, I think at first I thought, you know, that's interesting, but this is what we do. We go to church over here every Sunday. But eventually I started to come to believe that maybe we really did need to make a change, and there were some significant reasons to make a change. So I started talking to my wife about it, and she wasn't real enthusiastic about the idea. And I think a lot of it, really, we had talked, obviously, through this transition of my thinking, and she was having some sympathy to my way of thinking as I started changing. So it wasn't so much that she totally disagreed with that, but both of us had many other things that were tying us to that church. And I think you could probably imagine some of those issues as well. So there's the system of belief, and then there are lots of other things. There's personal relationships. There's a feeling of personal responsibility there, and on and on. In history, and, you know, even some of the family members, the broader family members, when they heard about the possibility of us making the switch, said, "What, you know, not going to a Free Methodist Church, that just doesn't make sense. What is that all about?" So there were a lot of emotional and other issues to kind of deal with somehow. And it really made me think, when you kind of have to sit back and think, okay, here are the pluses and the minuses of each of these courses of action. So how do you identify what are really the key issues? How do you identify the factors that should be weighted highly, and the other ones that are important but maybe aren't quite as important, and go through all that? So eventually I came to the point where I thought, we really are going to have to make this change. And so how do you go about doing that? And so I started talking a little bit more broadly with the rest of the family about some of the things that I had been exploring and some of the areas that my thinking had changed. So around the dinner table or at family devotions or whatever it might be, we would bring up these topics. And I think I was a little bit surprised. Maybe I shouldn't have been, but I wasn't all that persuasive. Things didn't just turn the corner quickly. And in fact, I don't think I don't know. Maybe others had a different experience, but I don't think I really changed anybody's thinking during the course of that. And so I had to start thinking about, well, okay, so what next if that's not going to work? And I don't remember even all the details, but it was a long stretch of time between the time when I thought we were going to have to make the switch to the time when we actually did something about it. And I was kind of hoping that I could slowly turn the focus of the family so it would kind of seem like a normal, natural thing to do. Well, it never really got to that point. And so eventually I did get some agreement from my wife that, well, she wasn't exactly 100% enthusiastic behind it, but at least, yeah, I think I could see, you know, that there's some good reasons to do that. So, in fact, maybe to sort of illustrate that point, my wife is a journaler. So I was going back through her journals during this period of time to see if I could find anything that sort of would enlighten what was happening then. So this is from an entry probably about 2 weeks before I had the talk with our pastor that we were going to be making a move. Her short quote in her journal was, "The looming church change, I'm afraid of it, so afraid. Tom has no doubts. Wow, I feel ripped apart." So I think that kind of summarizes. And you know, the issues were more personal ties and emotional, and and on along those lines. Good morning. So, as I said, right after that, I had a conversation with my pastor, which I knew wasn't going to be very pleasant, and it wasn't very pleasant. But then we basically said, I don't know what it was. I think this was in the middle of August, and we said, two more weeks or three more weeks, we'll be attending here and kind of close things off, and then we're going to be making a switch. So we went through those weeks of transition, which were somewhat challenging, and started attending here in September. I was very tuned into how everybody was going to respond to the change and adapt to the new situation. And I must say I was very encouraged. Not that right away everybody was 100% behind the change and the decision, but there really wasn't any kind of rebellion amongst the ranks before that, but just, some, I guess maybe reluctance would be probably the best way to put it. But I was very encouraged to see a number of indications that the fellowship and the instruction that we were receiving here was having a big impact on people's lives, other folks in the family. And there would be conversations where maybe two or three times something that came up in a sermon would be talked about, and I took note of every one of those instances, and I was very encouraged by that. And one of the members of my family I happen to know wrote a note to Eric that said, I really appreciated this aspect of your sermon or whatever. So that was very encouraging to me. And over time, I think we all made the adjustment, fit in well, and now everybody in my family is involved here and glad to be here. And I think the other thing to me, just my personal spiritual growth and encouragement, it was another indicator that, we were following God's guidance and we made the right change when we made the switch. So that is, at least from my point of view, the story of our journey here.
Hearing this again for me, I maybe to the younger guys here who are growing up in this very passive age of men, don't confront, don't do anything that's decisive. Hearing Tom gives me so much courage to know that there can be these seasons of unpopularity in the home, but holding on to God's hand, trusting, working out convictions, and enduring that season of unpopularity, and seeing God bless that, it is possible. And that leadership, it's amazing because this is decisive leadership that I see, and yet it's not this ham-fisted, autocratic, listen, honey, this is what we're going to do. Shut up, kids, get in the car. It's not that, but it's still this very decisive, methodical, trembling at times, hanging on to the hand of God, leadership. So I'm very encouraged.
Thanks.
So, Jason?
Okay. This kind of came about. I was talking with Pastor Eric last weekend after his sermon, and some of the subjects and topics he touched on. In particular, he was talking about lust, pornography, those type of things. And I wanted to share this with you guys. I thought about it for a while, and the wife and I, we've been sorting through a lot of these things here for quite a while. And I guess the bottom line that we came to was that the experience that we had just recently gone through, and this has been since January, is wasted if it's not shared or talked about. So anyway, I might get a little choked up during the process, but that's what it's about. So anyway, kind of a thumbnail sketch, or maybe let me start with this statement. My family, the Strassel family, me, my wife Heather, and my children, are here today because of God, of course, but because of pornography and serious sinful pornography. That's why we're here in Washington State. A little bit of background on that. In January, we found out that my wife's father, was heavily involved in child pornography, actually trafficking in it, and then also involved in prostitution as well. So totally shock to the family, total surprise to the family. He had kept this hidden for many, many years, hidden from the family and what he was up to. And it basically has, since that time, kind of ripped the family apart totally in a lot of different directions. And I guess I want to talk out the story. Part of it's for me, but part of it's for you and for myself as well, that this issue, especially I think in our society today, is such a serious issue that, as a good friend once told me, I think all men kind of dabble in it to some degree, or they think, I need to do better on this front. But I guess what I want to present today is what an extreme case of where this leads to and where the enemy takes you to, or where he has taken some to, and how destructive it can be to us as men, to our families, and then obviously to our children too. So the shocking part about the story is when we found out about it was back in January. A little bit of background on my family. I had been in business with my in-laws for the past 13, 14 years. My wife and I, we've been married about 15 years, came out around 2000 or so to work with her family on working on a family business. And her dad is not a believer. He's never been a believer, but her mom was. So, and I think I was talking with Brother Eric in the beginning about the families who have, say, one believing parent, and then the children end up being believers, but one of the spouses is not a believer. And that was the circumstance in my wife's home, her growing up. Her mom was always a believer. Her dad wasn't, but he kind of went along with it just to, you know, keep mom happy and that type of stuff. So, her dad's not a believer, but he did go along with the hey, I'm the ruler of my home and that, because he's a pretty strong-willed guy. So we found out about this whole situation. Her dad had been involved with the business with us, and then he's kind of been checked out of the business for about 10 years or so, and it's primarily my wife, myself, and my mother-in-law running this business. And we were moving along, and lo and behold, in January, we're sitting there working away at our office, and, you know, we're in there working and get a knock on the door. Well, actually, it wasn't a knock on the door. It was a, hey, everybody move away from their desk. Don't touch your computers. We're like, who is this? And sure enough, about six or seven cops come filing into our office. And they say, step away from your computers. You know, this is a search. We're going to be checking out things here. And we're like, what, you know, we thought, oh man, they must have made a mistake here, you know. It must have been the guy down the street, or, you know, because this is Southern Oregon, and there's a bunch of, I'll call them Ridge Runner guys that are, who knows, they're doing drugs or growing pot or something like that. So we thought, oh, they got the wrong place here. So sure enough, the sheriff reads off a search order to search the computers, and in particular for child pornography. And we're just shocked. I mean, I'm there, my wife's there, my mother-in-law's there. Actually, our children were there too. They were down in the other end of the building, but we're like, whoa, what's going on here, you know? And sure enough, as they get into it deeper and deeper, we find out that they're looking for my father-in-law. And so they had already been to his house and was looking for had seized his computers there, and they wanted to seize his computers because he did have a computer at the office there. So they wanted to seize that as well. And total cold bucket of water on you. What? Where did this come from? How did this happen? you know, how did this get to where it was? And you don't know. It's like, God, why did this come about? And through time, her father was sorry for what he did, and probably more sorry in the I got caught phase. And yet went away for a while, then came back. And yet, I guess in the end of it, it was seen that because he didn't have Christ, there wasn't a reason to necessarily... he definitely didn't want to do what he was doing anymore, but it was more of a, darn, you know, I just need to pull myself up by my bootstraps again and do this. And I guess the reason why I'm telling this story is that I'm sure in Walt's life, and he's a nice enough guy and a hardworking guy, always been a hardworking guy all his life. And whenever the pornography addiction started in his life, whenever he started down that path, I'm sure it was like every one of us where you're just mildly getting into something as an addictive type situation, whether it's alcohol or sex or whatever. And it continues to spiral down the path to where you get to, which is a little further, a little further, a little further, a little further down the road to where you get to, you become numb to the sin. Let me grab my phone here. We'll do a little high-tech version. But I found this verse in Job while studying, and this says this, Job 24:15. It says, "The eye of the adulterer waits for the twilight, saying, 'No eye will see me,' and he disguises his face." So to me, I was reading that verse, and I found that to be very powerful, that that is how this particular sin manifests itself. Oh, nobody sees me. Nobody sees what I'm doing. I'm just dabbling in this. And I think that's where her father was, too. And I don't say, I keep on pointing the finger at him. I point the finger at myself. I point the finger at all of us as men, as leaders, that you can dabble in things and you think, nobody sees me. I'm just doing my own thing over here. And sure enough, it just continues to spiral down and down and down until where he was at, which was in a very, very low spot, very destructive spot of his involvement in the level of what he was involved in. And I think it was kind of a warning shot to me and a wake-up call to me, realizing what this can do to a family. Him as a leader in his family, though he wasn't a Christian, he still had the office, quote-unquote, of leadership, and how destructive that was to him personally and then to his family, to the point that it is literally torn apart his family and sent us in all different directions now because of this. And just the absence of Christ when you are deep in a sin like that, without Christ, there is no hope for conquering that. There is no amount of pulling yourself up by your bootstraps, fighting it out, pushing forward, that's going to conquer a sin. It is only through Christ that that can be conquered. And I think that's what it kind of made me realize, is that not just in that particular sin, but in all areas of our lives, we as men, we as leaders, me as a man and a leader in my home, that there is no conquering sin without Christ. And no matter how hard you pound the fist or, you know, I can do this, it's not going to happen. So that basically happened in January, and like I said, it was kind of a spiraling down. Fortunately, he was sorry for what he had done, which was great, and he wanted to seek out help to try to change. But again, without Christ, it's really kind of a sad situation, to where the relationships are hurt now. The pseudo comfortable relationship we perhaps had before is even more damaged and even harder to do that communication with. So I guess in thinking through this all and talking it out and realizing what this is and what this has come to be is just, I guess, a warning or a thought to that I would pass on to all you men, and a challenge to myself, too, is that the sin, or sexual sin, is a powerful sin for all of us. All of us men, God has totally put us, wired us to be sexually motivated and to have that in our lives. And yet he's given us a wonderful, blessed situation in order to enjoy that part of what God has given us in our marriage relationships, when we're married, when we have our spouse. And that's a great way to be blessed in that. But and likewise, just like anything else in God's creation, we can also take that to an abusive type situation and a destructive situation, which is the pornography, which I think is so prevalent. And because of the accessibility of pornography now, especially on the internet, where it's the verse I was just reading, oh, nobody's going to see me, and nobody can. You get involved in it, you look at it, you do whatever, and then you pull back. Oh, well, nobody saw me do that. And it's not like even the old days where people sought after that stuff, or if it was prostitution or something like that, they sought after that stuff, and, you know, it was pretty much, people knew you were, or it was a little more out in the open, it was a little bit harder. The computer age has allowed the accessibility of dabble, pull back, dabble, pull back. And I think I see that, that's where that destructive path, where it can lead you to. Shortly after the situation happened, ironically, I had a young man working for me. He was about 22 or so. And his dad worked on the police force a couple towns down that dealt with this same type of crime, internet, child pornography and that. And I asked him his thoughts on it. And the man's a very strong Christian and a very good man. And I asked him his thoughts on that, on pornography and everything. And he said, you know, Jason, he goes, it's basically, because he's seen it all, of course. He's been in the field and he's been doing this for 20, 25 years. And he goes, it's a progressive, destructive, slippery slope, basically, that you can go down. And he goes, and when you start to go down, you drop another level and another level and another level. And he goes, and then what happens is you get down to the level where it just, the bottom falls out. And he goes, and that's with any sin, you know, alcoholism, whatever your sin would be. He goes, I've worked with these guys for 20, 25 years. And he goes, and that's where I see it. It's a progressive type situation over years, until you get to a point where you just, you know, he goes, that it's really hard to get him out of it, to change things. So it was really good. It was good to hear that from a perspective of a Christian man who's in law enforcement and involved in that. So I guess in thinking it through this all and bringing it all about, that this particular sin that is so prevalent, I think, among men, and as Pastor Eric brought up, among men and even in the Christian church. And I don't say this, you know, arrogantly, but it's we're all susceptible to this, you know, whether we're involved or not involved. And I think that it is a sin that is so destructive. And that's why I wanted to share what we went through here recently. And there's a lot of different rabbit trails I can go off on here. But is that this sin is a destructive sin. It's one that can tear a family apart. It did with us. Like I said, pornography is the reason we're here, because of what it did to our family. It totally tore apart our business that's in shambles, and we're trying to sort through all those details. And we had to basically just pack up and leave because of the situation. So sin is serious. Sin is really serious. And no matter what it is, whether it's pornography or whatever the sin, what have you. And I think we're charged as leaders of our home, and I've been convicted of this, again, not pointing the finger at anyone but myself, that we're charged with leaders of our family to guard against that. Be wise to the ways of the devil. You know, I think we live in an age, too, where we don't think that there is the deceiver out there, but you know what? He's alive and well, and he's out there. And not that God is not sovereign over all things and can conquer all things, but the deceiver is there. So don't think that he's not. So, and don't think that we're not lying to ourselves in the things and actions that we do, because it is, it's easy to fall prey to that. It's easy to fall prey to that as men, especially in a society that is so into giving into yourself, giving into your own pleasure, seeking and fulfilling yourself, because that's what our society is about. So as men, being on guard for that, that's kind of been my wake-up call. So again, not to speak as I'm, I've arrived on any of this in any situation, but I wanted to share where I was at and what happened to us as a family through this particular sin, to maybe help some who are in the body of Christ, and including myself, that Pastor Eric brought up about, you know, having a ministry for this particular sin, like they have the Alcoholics Anonymous and all that, having a ministry in our body for men out there, because this sin is so much in the world and in our face, I think that's a great idea, and I think it's one that our church could be blessed by. So that's all I had to say.